Okay, I'm going to start. If you guys are finished, I don't want to interrupt your conversation, but it'll be good if I can get going. Just a little bit about myself first, for those of you that don't know me. My name's Andy Weeds. Yes, I've had the whole life of a surname Weeds, as in the garden, and all of that. But basically, I moved to Wiltshire about 30 years ago this September, and had a family of three children. One had already popped out before we got here, and the other two happened while we were here. And I've been a design and technology teacher, Milton Keynes first for 5 years, and then 15 years up in Rorton. And then about 2002, I took the decision to alter my career and start Open Blue. Obviously, it wasn't just me, but it was Dayspring wanting to do something for the county, of which I'm going to give you a little bit of a history on that this morning, just so that you get an idea of where the church and what God has been saying about Dayspring and about Open Blue and where Open Blue fits. And I've been having a chat with Dave, who you've met this morning, Dave Halls. We were talking about, well, I think he said this last week at his talk, if you don't get Open Blue, you don't get Dayspring. And I didn't hear his talk last week because I was doing teens, but I've listened to his talk, and it still impacts me, the fact that if you don't get what Open Blue's about, you don't really get what Dayspring Church is about. And so I'm going to try and give you a little bit of an explanation of how we've got to where we are this morning. And I feel like I've been on a boat journey where I've set off maybe about 2002 as a church. We set off on a boat and we took a journey and we didn't know what was going to happen. It was a bit like one of those Swallows and Amazons adventures or something out of Lord of the Rings, where they go off on the boat and they don't quite know what's going to happen. And we've had that. We could look back and we can see what's happened. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that, like that, this morning. But also, we've sort of come into port for a little while at a staging point, and we've been there for a little while, but we've got to set out on the journey again, and yet again, we don't quite know where we're going and what we're doing, but I've got some ideas, and I want to sort of share those with you a bit and see what God's saying to us in the whole process. So that's really, I hope, where we're going. Now, personally, stuff happened for me about Wiltshire and God's call to Wiltshire. So one morning I'm driving to work over in Rorton, and we had been doing some mission work as youth leaders in another church. This is before I was part of Dayspring, and I was listening to some Christian music or something, driving over past Yatesbury and going down towards Beckhampton roundabout near Avebury. And something happened in the car as I was singing along, and you don't want to hear me do that. Only God hears me sing, really, because it's pretty awful. But I'm singing along, and I get this phrase in my head, raise your eyes to Wiltshire. And I'm a bit blown away by it, because there's a bit of a spiritual experience, you know, a bit of a fuzzy, warm feeling thing happening at the same time. And then later on that same journey, as I'm driving into Rorton, I got this other phrase, centres of excellence. And this was like, that second thing was a bit like a God setting me up to say, I am really serious about this. Because when I got into work that day, my A-level results from my sixth form were absolutely dreadful. And the head really wanted my guts for garters. And it was a really, really low point in my teaching career. And the deputy head of sixth form came to me, he was sort of a friend of mine, and he said, look, the head wants to axe the A-level. He wants to chop it. And but he said, we've persuaded them that he's not going to, but you're going to have to do something. And he said, why don't you go and visit some centres of excellence? And I'd not really heard that phrase before. It is around in educational circles, I know. But I sort of heard this phrase and thought, well, I've just heard that phrase on the way into work. And that word of that centres of excellence has sort of, you know, was for the moment, I think. But the other word was emphasised, raise your eyes to Wiltshire. And then we joined Dayspring and we found that they had got a whole stack of stuff about being called to the county. Now, can we go to the next slide? Because our slides are going to lead me a little bit here. When we came to Wiltshire, this is the sort of thing you think that Wiltshire looks like and what Wiltshire's like. It's lovely, green, beautiful trees, the downlands, good skies. It's a beautiful place to live. It's wonderful, okay? And a lot of people come to Wiltshire specifically for that, maybe for a weekend, maybe for a holiday, or maybe to live because it's a different sort of lifestyle that they want. But when we came to Wiltshire, we found that it looked a little bit more like this, spiritually. It was a bit of a desert place. Anything that grew seemed to be quite prickly. Spiritually, it was like, when we came 30 years ago, there was one charismatic church in Bradford-on-Avon, and there was nothing else happening. It was all traditional church, and it was just, it felt quite dry, really, and difficult. Just go on to the next one, though. What happened? That's a picture of me on the right, by the way. Some people who've known me for a while will, like Chiquita, will have a good laugh there. I'm showing off my legs nicely. That's Philip and my wife on the right, and I think that's Kevway in the middle. And we were doing a prophetic act there, and we actually made this thing of twigs, which is in the shape of the county of Wiltshire. It's a long time ago. I'm not quite sure when it is. Maybe around 98, 99, 1999, something like that. And we were saying, look, as a church, God's giving us something about the county, and we want to get involved with it, God. How do you do that? And we didn't really know what it meant. We didn't know how a small church could actually influence a county or do something in a county. We weren't really sure. So we just started praying, really. We did all sorts of weird and wonderful things. Just go on to the next one. These are my three children. Are probably about, how old do you think? The one in the middle, Megan, is 25. She was 25 yesterday, and she's probably about 10 there, okay? And that's just a year before we started doing the bus. I've put that picture up because I really want you to look at the one in the middle, not the other two. Megan, she's only 10 years old. Just go on to the next slide. And there's Megan yesterday. She'd given birth to our fourth grandchild, her first child, little Jacob Samuel, £8.03 for those who want to know. and 2 o'clock in the morning. And a brilliant morning this morning with Stephen, Emma and Daniel. Just really sort of, as a granddad again, it was just great to do that and just pray over Daniel and, you know, got all of the different things that God's going to do with him and you know, the same for little Jacob Samuel. So that's really good. Go on to the next one now so Megan won't be too embarrassed. One of the other things that we did about the county, though, was we said, oh, well, we had this sort of thing about planting trees. So we took seeds, conker seeds and acorns like that, and we put them in pots. And over about a winter, we let them grow and they started to shoot up. And we got all these pots and we did work on art, drawing trees and all of this sort of stuff. And we began to pray into that, and we began to go out into the county, in different parts of the county, all over the county, north, south, east and west, and in the middle, although you can't go right in the middle of Salisbury Plain because there's unexploded ordnance there, so you just have to leave that alone. But and then really we were praying for this. Just go to the next picture. And that's an oak tree, and it started as an acorn, which you've just seen. And so we were praying from small things to grow into big things. And it takes time. Just like Megan was 10 years old when we started the bus, or 11 years old when we started the bus, and she's 25 now, and we're on to our second bus. The other ones had to be retired. So growing trees takes time. So we're here for the long haul in the county. Okay, just go on to the next slide, because I can't remember what that is. Oh, yes. This was a drawing done by somebody in the church in the late, it's about 98, 97, 98, something like that. Well, it was, God's finger was pointing and saying, look, there is, we are calling you to the county. So it wasn't just me and God, hearing God saying, raise your eyes to Wiltshire. But I found people in Dayspring who were going, yeah, the county. God's calling us to the county, all sorts of different things. Just go on to the next one. This photograph typifies God's word to us as a church. Okay, and you're going to try, we'll just unscramble that for you. There is a single carriageway road, or, you know, two-way road, going under one arch of the bridge. This is around Chippenham. Okay, but the councillors or the developers or whatever put that structure of that bridge in place for conditions that did not then exist. Okay, because they were anticipating, you can see all this green on the right hand side here, of having another carriageway and making it a dual carriageway. And in actual fact, God spoke to us about that, about putting things in place for things that don't yet exist, putting structures in place for things that don't yet exist. So, and that's, you know, 15 odd years ago. That seems to be a long time. Next slide. There's a tiny little bit of water coming out of that pipe, and all over Wiltshire there are springs. I have to tell you, I love telling this story. There's one village down near the Salisbury Plain that's just on the edge of Salisbury Plain, which is actually up on a plateau. And when it rains hard, the rain obviously just runs down the hill just like normal. But if it rains long and hard over weeks, this particular village, they had escaped all the little flash floods and stuff in the streams, but this particular row of houses began to find that their carpets were wet. And they thought, well, we haven't got a flood. What's going on? The water's going down the stream. There's no problem. Our carpets are wet. And they discovered a spring under this row of houses. And it was just welling up underneath. And the water table had risen so much that water was springing up. And you get that all over Wiltshire. Springs of water coming up. And we felt God was speaking to us about the fact the Spirit of God is wanting to well up in the whole of the county. Just go on to the next one, because I can't remember. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's a lot of text there. I don't know if we really want to read that. Hugh Osgood. He's a senior sort of Christian leader in the London area, really, particularly with black churches and stuff, but has a prophetic ministry. Also works out in Pakistan and other parts of Africa, Uganda and so on. And he came a number of years ago now and was just sort of saying things like, you're a church for Wiltshire, not just for Chippenham. I've never wavered in that conviction. I've been incredibly impressed with the way you pick up challenges like that. Relationships, the open blue, OB is open blue approach. The question of capacity is not just a numerical issue. It has to do with vision, a passion, vision, capacity. And I felt from day one to say that Dayspring focus on a little area in Chippenham would have been a way of denigrating the potential that God has put in the hearts of the church. The capacity for the church isn't determined by numerical strength. And I've added on, Gideon could be an example there, just so you've got a biblical fix. You know, it wasn't about numbers, it was about God doing the stuff. Just go on to the next one, because another little bit. And he continued to say, I think that God wants to say to you that you are on the brink of a testimony related to the army. Now, that's over 15 years ago, and we now have a testimony with the army. I haven't got enough time to tell you. You've got enough skills and people to be a church five times bigger. Don't worry that you've. That was the day we went in. He was speaking in a drama studio. You are taking the territory. I believe you're incredibly insignificant, and that you see you as one of the most significant. Go on to the next slide, please. We'll just get right. That's where I want to be with that. Right. When we were looking at the county, and when we thought about it, what actually we thought about was people groups like the travellers, like the army, the police, the fire service, the NHS, large people groups, towns, and things like that. And we began to pray for them. That's how we did it, because that was the way we knew we could do it. And we began to think about it like that. And we got our first bus, and we, as a mobile community centre, we converted that. As a design technology teacher, that was my biggest project up to date. This next bus that we're doing now, we've nearly completed, is my biggest project, really, because we've done more work on it as a team than we did previously. And You know, I just, there's just a, what was it I was going to say then? I got distracted by the bus thing then. I've started thinking about the generator and and the carpeting problems and stuff. What did I just say before that? That's testing you now, isn't it? Biggest project, just before that.
We were praying into...
Oh yes, we're praying into these people groups and stuff, all right? But we've done some work as a church since then. If you look on our website, you'll find that we've got a little bit called spiritual pathways. And we've done quite a lot of work as a church on people having a preferred pathway to find God. So there's the people who are active, there are people who are reflective, there are people who are into the Word, the people who are into creative, the people who want to get outside and see God's creation. There's all sorts of different ways of doing it. And you have your preferred ways, but also you need to be challenged to, you know, have a look at the other ones as well. But you do have your preferred way of actually accessing God and hearing God more readily, or feeling God's presence, or being with God in the way that you feel. And we all have our different pathways. And I think that when we go out on the bus, or when we're at work, or when we're just talking to family or our friends, we're having a bit of a chat over a cup of coffee somewhere, we need to be aware that everybody's got their own pathways. And we need to just sort of help people find their pathway. And the way you help people by finding their pathway is by explaining to them how you found yours. You haven't got a better testimony than that. So if I ask you today, what's the way that you really find that you access God and the thing that does it for you? I know for my wife, for instance, she reads the Bible a lot. More than I do, really. I only do it in panic times, like when I'm speaking, you know. but I've read it. I've read it a lot. So I don't think that I haven't read the Bible. It's just that I don't read a verse a day or something like that. But I read chunks and I get into it and stuff like that. But I have my times. And I can't be consistent somehow. I'm not that most consistent of people when it comes to that sort of stuff. But my wife is really energized by it. What are you energized by when you're actually active with God? I find the outside and seeing a tree. To be honest with you, trees still do it for me. You know, they've got a great message in there, really. Do you know, I'll just go on about that for a minute. You know that oak tree I showed you? That is a whole environment in itself. It's not just a tree. It's a whole environment. There are hundreds and hundreds of species of animals and insects and grubs and parasites and all sorts around that oak tree. It's phenomenal what trees are. And if you take that as an image for the church, then there you go. So pathways, we need to be aware of what they are, what other people may, where they might fit in and where you fit in. You need to analyze yourself a little bit. We live in a very odd time in some respects, and in a brilliant time as well, and a very challenging time. But I think that if you lived 200 years ago, you'd probably said the same. It would have just, you know, stuff would have been challenging. It always has been. It's just different for us. It's just different challenges. We are in a post-Christendom culture. In fact, I have read recently that probably some people think that Britain is probably the most secular country in the world or something. You know, but I think that's a bit much. I think even Dave commented on it last week. He thought that Belgium and the Netherlands were possibly a bit more secular, you know, if there's a competition running. But we are in a post-Christendom thing. We're not, Christians don't have the power and influence, you know, in government like perhaps there was 100 years ago. We're a secular society, but it's not unspiritual, for definite. I read recently, and I challenge you to find this, but you know the Manchester bombings? And there was a lady, I'm not really into music, but there was a lady who was doing a pop concert where the Manchester bombing happened, and that lady zoomed off after the thing, but she came back to do a memorial sort of concert, but she did it with a load of other people who sing in that. And there was one guy, I do remember his name, Justin Bieber, yeah? And he gets a lot of criticism, but he has put it out there that he's a Christian. I think I saw a little bit of video, or saw some text about what they'd actually said during that concert, and somebody was saying, this concert actually was really quite a religious experience in a way, or quite a spiritual experience, and he was actually saying things like, you know, feel God's love here, we could, you know, and so they were just sort of saying, look, even in this secular society that we have, the memorial concert for these Manchester bombing victims, and there they're actually in a concert which has actually got a whole range of different aspects of what we would consider to be like, almost like, not really a church service, but a spiritual event. And I think that's really interesting, and I think that's really, really good. A couple of names for you. I keep putting these out every time. I don't know how many people do. I do Twitter because I find Twitter just helps me find different articles all the time. You have to follow the right guys, and I'm not sure that I do all the time. But there is a couple of guys I'm following. One guy is called Zach Hoag, and he also follows another guy called Brian Zand. And they're both American, but they're not that American, which is all right. I know they've got bigger problems than we have politically, but there you go. But Zach Hoag has this. He's done this thing. I downloaded it actually. Because it's about new charismatics and what some of the characteristics we have. I'm just mentioning it so that if you're interested, you'd have a look for Zach Hoag and his little article on his blog or something called New Charismatics. Or you can ask me and I'll send you a link or something later. But he's been saying so. He's written a book really recently called The Light is Winning, and I haven't ordered it, I haven't read it, but he keeps putting little tweets up about it and stuff like that. But one of the things that he said, as Christians, don't forget he's talking in an American context here, but I think it still applies to us in British Christianity, is he said, we look for power and influence. We look for the authority, the power and the influence. He said, but Jesus isn't there. He's in the small and the ordinary. And I want to just take that for a moment and say, I think that in our thinking 15 years ago, that's where we were with the county. We were looking for power and influence. We were looking for the authority and how we could influence things. So we think it's good that we know Simon Townsend, who's a major in the army, and he's actually second in command at 9 Regiment. Okay? But Simon hasn't been here all of the time. In fact, he was here as a captain about 10 years ago, and then he's gone off here, there, and everywhere as the army posts him around Britain and the world. And then he's back to be second in command here. But we've been working with the army all the time he's been away, doing the small and the ordinary. And I'm not sure how much Simon can really help us anyway with our mission. He might have a garage for the bus, or might he might have something beyond the wire. But behind the wire is a real pain with the army, I have to tell you. It really is. Getting through the guard room all the time, and they have all this security stuff, and, you know, it's a bit of a bind. I don't know why they do it. You see ordinary soldiers, they just zoom straight through, you know, as everybody else has to show the passport. It's like going abroad. I'm going to Wales or something. I'm losing the plot there now, so just... power and influence and small and ordinary. And I think that we should be... I do think that God wants us to change tack a little bit with the new bus. I think he wants to look at the small and ordinary. Okay. Now, we've also done some other stuff as a church. We did something called walk across the room. And Philippa was reminding me of this. Philippa's my wife. And she was reminding me of this just yesterday. She was saying, walk across the room. So when you're there at work and you're having a cup of tea and everybody's there, you can stand there having your cup of tea, or it's a conference, or it's, you know, wherever it is, whatever situation you're in with other people around. And normally you would just stand and keep yourself to yourself, it's okay. But actually, what about actually getting to a point where you literally walk across the room? I'm not going to talk to you, Nigel. And just say, hello, and what part of the department are you in? Or, you know, and you walk across the room, what's your, you know, and start to have a conversation with people. Now, conversations are something that we've talked about in Dayspring. We've talked about counting conversations rather than trying to count bums on seats or doing altar calls where people try to, you know, try to make a decision or they think they make a decision, maybe they go back on it, feel guilty, all of that. Or you just count the conversations. That's what Cabaret Connections is about. If you want to know more about Cabaret Connections, I think you'll have to Google it. Not Google it, look on our website. We've got a link, haven't we, Dave? And you can find a little bit out about that. The strap line is stories of faith in a laid-back setting. I haven't got time this morning to talk all about Cabaret. I'm trying to talk about Open Blue. But it's a similar sort of concept that we're just trying to have conversations and let people slowly grow towards their faith. It takes time. So Megan was 10, now she's 25, and she's finally had a baby, which is great. The acorn got planted a number of years ago. It's still not that big oak tree. All the conkers that we planted, all the little seedlings we did, some of them will have died, some of them will have lived, some of them will be bigger than others, but they surely ain't, after 15 years, they are not, or even 20 years, they are not a full-blown oak tree like that, or a massive conker tree. They're not there yet. Takes time, and it takes time for people to change, and we're finding that in Wiltshire, if nowhere else. I want to just see whether, you know that picture we had up there with me in my shorts, but we actually had the wooden frame round for Wiltshire. It's a sort of almost a rectangular with a pointy bit at the bottom and a slightly pointy bit at the top shaped county. Instead of looking at it in terms of towns, why don't we look at it in terms of conversations? That we're looking, instead of looking to try and cover all of the geography in some sort of way that we don't really know, why don't we actually try to think about it in terms of covering the county in conversations and spreading conversations through the county? Just dealing with the small and the ordinary. Now, so as I began to think about that, I think to myself, that then empowers me, because wherever I am, and whatever I do, and whoever I meet, I can have a conversation. And just find out where people are at. I'm not trying to push them into Christianity. I'm just trying to have a conversation, find out where they're at, and what they're doing, what's really good in their life and what's not. And what really bugs them and what doesn't. And starting to have a relationship. And Open Blue is about relationships. Because if you look at what Open Blue's done through the bus, we have formed relationships time after time after time after time. And it takes a long time to form good relationships, especially if you go into a new community, the people that you haven't gotten in with, if you like, and you've just got to go. This is what I think we've found in Open Blue, is that it takes 3 years of regularly going into a community before the community say, so you're not going then? You're not leaving us? Nope, we're here for quite a while. And then it takes another couple of years before other people, because people adopt you at different rates, other people will say, oh, so you're not going then? So, all right, well, I'll open up a bit now then. I'll actually tell you some of them. I certainly wasn't going to tell you my problems if you were just going to be here today and gone tomorrow. No way. I'm not going to bare my soul to you, but then people do begin to let you into their lives, and then you begin to have better relationships. So it takes a long time. And this is what Open Blue's about. Okay. I'm quite excited about the new bus. What should I say? The new bus is getting me quite excited, because for those of you who don't know, it's just over 18 months ago now, isn't it? No. When did we actually get the letter from Stagecoach?
February last year.
February 2016, we got a letter from Stagecoach, which, as in an answer to us from 3 months before that, we'd written a letter saying, would you like to give us a bus? We thought that it was just dead in the water. I announced to the church, we're going to go and buy a bus with the 18 grand I think we were going to spend on a bus that week, and then have no money to do the conversion, because we'd have spent it all on buying a bus. But we felt that's what we should do. And then on the Monday morning, Dave found an old email. No, sorry. That's an email that he should have seen on Friday, but he didn't. But it was. I think there's timing in that, because Dave normally is assiduous with his email, more than anyone else I know, which, you know what it's like when that happens. You're always behind somebody who's got on top of their email. But Dave then said on the Monday morning, he said, I've got this email from Stagecoach and give you a bus. And we weren't really expecting it. It was a bit of a surprise in that sense. And we felt that God had gifted us the bus. And then we had the money that we'd got at that point, and although we had to get more than we have, you know, the process started. Now, I'm dying to tell you this. This guy, Zach Hoag, wrote a little bit of his blog about writing a book. All right? And I'm not a writer. I'm not a musician, as you already know. I try to do a bit of writing and stuff like that, but not books and stuff, you know, just... I'm going to do... I don't know. Anyway, he wrote this. It's three quick things about writing a book by Zach Hoag, but I've edited it, okay? So it's three quick things about converting a bus by Andy Weeds. Okay, so I'm going to read a little bit of both ways on it. So you go... He's titled it, It's All Consuming, and I agree with that, so I haven't edited that out. Okay? And where he put a pile of books, I put a picture of the bus, okay? Because he put a pile of books, which is very uninteresting. Whereas a bus, rear engine bus, Volvo engine with a turbo and engine braking, air suspension, power steering, that's much, much more interesting. Okay? With a 10 kVA generator, which is fully insulated and heat and sound and got a diesel-fired heater and all of that now, that's far better. Okay. It says, converting a bus is all time-consuming. To go down the road of converting a bus is to go all the way down that road. Going halfway is a surefire way to failure. Well, that's pretty obvious, isn't it? If you go only halfway with converting a bus, you have failed. Because you haven't completed the job. So I suppose he's saying the same thing about a book. It takes a writer to say the obvious. Never mind. Because it's a total kind of proposition. If this is what you want to do, if this is what you're going to do, then you'd better be prepared to do it to death. Interesting. Not quite sure about that, but I've kept it in. I've kept it in. Writing a book isn't free therapy. Okay? Writing a book isn't free therapy. It's the most costly therapy you'll ever undertake. I'm not saying it's not therapeutic, and I have found converting the bus to be very therapeutic. For those of you that know me, I was not in a good place about converting the bus. I spent about 2 days a week doing it and didn't really have the energy to do much more to begin with. But as I've gone on, I've gained in energy and strength, and it's just energizing me more and more, and I feel my strength is just going up and up, which is really, really good, because I've spent a few years feeling quite not so good about that side of things. He said, it's therapeutic in the depths of... he says, I'm not saying it's not therapeutic. It is. But it isn't therapeutic in some summer holiday idyllic kind of way. Now, he'd put Pollyanna, but Pollyanna's something to do with a book. I don't really know. But summer holidays definitely be out buses, isn't it? Okay. It's therapeutic in the depths of self-doubt and despair until your brain nearly explodes and your heart as well, in a kind of way. Okay, maybe that's a bit dramatic, but it probably isn't. The bus-converting brand of therapy is as brutal as it is beautiful, which is to say it's costly. And it is costly in money terms and in time. I've had a fantastic team of volunteers that have given their time and their energy, and without them... Well, I'd still just be taking the seats out, I think, to be honest with you. It's just been amazing, the number of people and the skill and abilities that people have put into it. It was a bit humbling, really, as well. And also, I've woken up at times in the morning, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning, going, we aren't going to finish it. it's a disaster. I've been given all this money and I've spent quite a lot of it. I'm not going to be able to give it back. And the bus won't run. Oh, you know. And then you wake up a little bit more and you feel that it's perhaps not quite as bad as you thought at 5 o'clock in the morning. But that's their despair and those moments. And then he says, writing a book is transformative. You convert, hoping your writing will change someone's life for the better. Now, I've been talking to Paul, actually. I mean, as we did some work on the generator, I've been going, well, how does this physical work try to translate into a spiritual thing? In fact, the first time, we had a bit of a conversation about it, but I'm still puzzled about it. But the first time that somebody in the Bible is talked about as having the Spirit of God on them is not in a meeting. It's not about prophecy. It's not about a word of knowledge. It's not about any of those things. Not about preaching. It's about making stuff. It's about making stuff with metal, which I really like, and making stuff in the Spirit of God. I'm not quite sure how it works, but this guy gets somewhere to it. He says, right, converting a bus is transformative. You convert, hoping your bus conversion work will change someone's life for the better. And that's what we're about. So when the bus is on the road, it's going to go into community, we're going to have conversations, build relationships over a period of time, and it's going to change people's life for the better. Dave, just come up here. You need a microphone or something, is that there? Dave's got a little story, because I asked him this morning, and he's not good with out preparation, but he's going to be good this morning, because he's told this story before. But there is a story that Open Blue has.
Okay, yeah. Open Blue was working into an area of social housing on the edge of Malmesbury. We had funding to go there. We started visiting regularly, weekly. And a young mum came onto the bus. Her name was Leanne. And I don't know how it came up in conversation, but she, because we do cooking with the kids on the after-school club, she said to the worker there, Karen Vergatini, she said, could you teach me how to cook? I don't know how to cook. You know, with my child, all we do is eat takeaways and we buy, you know, ready meals and that kind of thing. And so over a number of weeks, Karen Vergatini taught her how to cook simple things. I think it was, you know, pizza and chips and stuff. But it was cooking stuff from fresh ingredients, cooking it from scratch and doing it. And she came away from it really, really pleased about it. At the time, Andy and Philippa had a journalist from the Gazette and Herald living with them, lodging with them, and he heard the story and he said, that's really good. I'm gonna write an article about it. So something went into the Gazette and Herald about it, and it was great to hear Leanne say, I didn't know how to cook, I now know how to cook, it's really good, it's transformed my family, it's making things better for me. And so we'd listened to somebody in the community, we'd heard their need. Karen had, on her own bat, I think, really, just got on and done it. It would have been very easy to say, well, that isn't what we're into, we're doing this, but we did that. And the other thing was, we showed that article to Sue, my wife, who was doing the fundraising for Open Blue at the time. She showed that article at a fundraising a conference where funders were meeting people who wanted funds. And somebody said, wow, that's a fantastic story. If you were to start to run a load of courses like that, we would fund them. And so they gave us the money to do two or three courses. And we got Leanne to come back in with her friends, with Andy, and Wendy got involved. And we now know of them as the One Pot Cookery course. And Leanne and her friends went on, I think they did one cookery course.
They did another, yeah.
And then they did some more, and then Wendy did some stuff, because one of the things we were trying to do was, through the cookery, improve their numeracy and their literacy skills. And so they did something about maths, and then suddenly we found out they'd gone back to college. They'd done a couple of courses at college, and they'd gone and found a job, and were working, and things like that. And so just out of teaching something very simple to cook, we'd given someone the confidence to go on and do things and to see their life changed and transformed.
Thanks, Steve. Thank you. Very good to see that there. That's pretty good, that. It's transformed somebody's life, really, hasn't it? And I think that's really what Open Blue's about. You might say, oh, where's the faith in that? I think it's growing. I'm still Facebook friends with Julie, that's Leanne's mum, and Julie from time to time goes, when's the bus coming back? As she does. I've had to say, well, I don't know yet, but it is going to go back at some point. And there is a relationship and stuff's happening. So it's really quite, it's quite interesting. And that sort of has developed the One Pot Cookery course, where we've touched other people. We've had something else to do whilst we've been without our first bus. Counting conversations with people is really, really important. I think we probably ought to start with that. I think the small, the ordinary stuff is really important for us with the new bus. I don't know if you've been looking at the picture behind me on the screen, I don't know if you can read that on the right there. Jesus standing on the shore at Galilee looking for disciples. Now, the thing is, you see, the bus won't work on its own. It needs a driver. It needs people to clean it. It needs people to operate as play workers. It needs people to do after-school clubs. It needs people to talk to older people on board. It needs to have people who connect up into the communities and find ways. That's probably more my thing. But we're going to need all sorts of people. Now, I was talking to somebody yesterday, and they quoted me Psalm 32. And I just want to see if I can read it to you. I think I've got it here. So it says, this is God talking to the psalmist. It says, I will instruct you and teach you in the way you should go. I'll counsel you with my loving eye on you. Don't be like the horse or the mule, which have no understanding and must be controlled by a bit and bridle, although he will not come to you. Many are the woes of the wicked, but the Lord's unfailing love surrounds the one who trusts in him. Now, here's the image, right? God's saying to us, I'm going to just talk to you and tell you how to do it, and it'll be great. I'm just going to lead you in the way, and it'll just instruct you and teach you like that. Don't be like the horse and the mule. And I've thought about the horse and the mule. Any donkey is pretty resistant, really. They don't want to do what you want to do. So you have to put a bit in their mouth, and you have to make them do it. Okay? And he says, don't be resistant. And I was talking to this friend of mine, and I was just talking about this switch inside us. And I think there's a switch inside us. And it goes, switch. Okay, Lord, I'll do anything you like. Oh my goodness, I'm scared to death, but I will. Or, nope, I'm not doing that. Or, nope, I'm going to vet everything you say and I'm going to check whether I actually do it or not. Now, I've been in both places, and I'm sure you have. But I think that Jesus is a little bit kinder than I am, because I've put that over pretty roughly, really. And he does stand on the shore waiting for us to come in and be his disciples. And I've wrestled with this whole discipleship thing, which is going around Christianity and church in the UK at least. Discipleship's the main thing and all of this. And I thought to myself, I didn't really hear about that 30 years ago when I was a Christian, so it must be the new in thing. I'm just going to watch that and see how it goes. I'm not sure if I... But we are disciples, aren't we? And I don't know whether the disciples are the right word for us, because it might have too many connotations. But what about just following Jesus and taking his instruction, and when he nudges us to go one way, we actually do it and go, okay, Lord. Yeah, okay. It's a bit scary, Lord. Can you just put yourself in the position of Ananias? Ananias in the Acts of the Apostles was just an ordinary guy who lived in Damascus, I think it was. You know what Damascus is like. Ordinary guy. And he's become a Christian, and he's praying to God. But he has, on the news, he's heard about this bloke who's destroying the churches in Jerusalem and is taking people to Christians and putting them in prison and stuff. And he's heard he's on his way to Damascus. But then it's all gone quiet, doesn't quite know what's happened. And then he's praying, and he feels God saying to him, This guy who's destroying the church, I want you to go see him. I want you to go and, you know, pray for him and heal him and baptize him and everything like that. Wouldn't you think you've gone a little bit mad? But somehow the guy does it. And I think sometimes we just have to think sometimes we're a little bit mad. We are a little bit mad, really, having a bus, aren't we? You know, life would be much simpler without, in some respects. But I have to say, much more boring. Now, I've got a final thing to say, and then I'm done, which is this. I was talking to Dave Halls about this the other day, and he said this to me, and I'm still trying to get my head around it, but I thought I'd let you in on it, because it's part of the journey that I'm on, and hopefully it's part of the journey you're on with me, which is this. Open Blue is not an adjunct to Dayspring. Open Blue is not an adjunct to Dayspring. Dayspring Sunday mornings are an adjunct to what Open Blue does. So here this morning is the side show of the main show, which happens with Open Blue in the week. Now, do you want to be involved in the side show or the main show? How are you going to do it? How are you going to structure your life to do it? How exciting is it going to be? How challenging is it going to be? Yesterday we ran a course called The Better Version of Me. Maybe I should have gone on it. Get a better version of me. I'm sure you'd all be very glad. But also us. I hope you're uncomfortable right now, because I've been uncomfortable thinking about this. So I don't think it's fair that only I should be uncomfortable. I think we all should be uncomfortable. If Jesus is looking for disciples and he wants us to follow him wherever we go, and God's commissioned us to go to a county, then we've got to spend our waking hours trying to work out how to do it. It doesn't mean we're not going to have fun on the way, because I think it's going to be hilarious. I mean, some of the mistakes we're going to make is going to be brilliant, but some of the things we're going to see happen. I'll just end with one. We did something called Healing Leaves on the bus maybe 10 years ago, where we just had these little leaves, bay leaves, I think they were. And I did it with another group, and I just said, look, guys, take a leaf. Bay leaves have a sort of a healing property, but we're just going to pray that they have a healing property. We're going to pray that they will heal you. So when you go home tonight, if you've got something wrong with you somewhere, just put the leaf on you, and, you know, we'll pray that you get better. I didn't say they would get better. I just said, we'll pray to get better. One lady came back the next week. She said, yeah, she gave me too much information, to be honest with you, but I'll tell you anyway. She said, I went to have a bath, and I put the leaf on my head. Fortunately, it was there, because she got a really bad headache. She suffered migraines and stuff. And she said, I put the leaf on my head, and the headache went. And she was impacted by that. And she's still on her journey. She used to be really concerned about heaven and hell and whether she was going to go to hell or not. She's not concerned about that now. She's much more open to the fact of the kindness of God and the love of God, and we continue to have conversation. I'd quite like you to, if there's a measure of how you guys, or how, if I was in your position, I'd be responding, it would be that I'd actually find the time to go and look at the Pathways stuff on the website, or I'd go and have a look at the Open Blue Facebook page, or I'd have a look at the values of Open Blue, or I'd start to ask some questions of people and discuss it, because you're feeling that God's turning you to face in line with Open Blue. Because, as I said earlier, the ship or the boat that we're on is now leaving port again. Doesn't mean you can't jump on or swim out to it later, but it is leaving port now. We are going on a journey, and it is going to be exciting, and it is going to be really interesting, and you are going to be used by God in ways that I can't imagine. I can't tell you too much about what the journey's been like, because I don't really know, but I think conversations are going to be important. Okay, so if you don't get Open Blue, you don't get Facebook, but that's as good as I can do today. If you want to have a look at this book here, this is something that started in 2002. And it's got a few bits and pieces in it from different people that have put in stuff. And I think that's probably about it, Dave. Are you? Are we done there?
I think so.
Good.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you.